Fred Film Radio, Festival de Cannes, France.
Angela Cherry, Fred Film Radio from the Cannes Festival, here with Eric Sallet, the director of Boy from Heaven, in competition at the Cannes Festival. Tariq, did you have in mind since the beginning the specificity of the story?
I was very specific. I mean, my grandfather was studying at Al-Azhar. So for me, it was something I've been fascinated with for a long time. You know, everyone, all Muslims know about Al-Azhar, of course. It's like the Vatican, and it's the Grand Imam is the Pope. But, you know, being interested in history, I've studied it a lot, and it has a very interesting history, because when Al-Azhar was built by the Fatimids is a Shia sect. So it was built as a Shia institution. And then when Salahuddin took Egypt, when he invaded it, because, you know, Salahuddin needed Egypt because it was rich, but it had a very weak army, because he needed the money to then invade Jerusalem. So when he did that, he right away knew that, okay, I have to change Al-Azhar from Shia to Sunni. And there's a lot of myths about how that happened, and that he destroyed the library, and, you know, it was one of the greatest libraries in the world. And that's a myth. It's not real. The truth is that the library was destroyed years before that, because the Fatimids were not, they weren't paying their army. So the army went in and took the books from the library and sold them. So there's always these sort of myths in all these stories. So I was super interested in that. And then I've always been interested in Sheikh Al-Azhar, the Grand Imam. The current Sheikh Al-Azhar, the Grand Imam, is super intelligent. Very, very intelligent guy. Very sophisticated. Much more sophisticated than most European leaders, I would say. No, honestly. And knows more. Like, and I think that, like, you know, people say, what's your motive? I'm telling you, my motivation was like, okay, I learned how to write from a great Swedish writer called Stieg Larsson. We wrote together in early in my career, and we went to Spain to write together, and he taught me sort of the art of writing, you know. And writing is really what I love to do. I hate directing. I hate it so much. But I don't trust other people to direct my material. That's the problem. I mean, my dream is to find a director. I mean, if Iñárritu came to me and said, oh, I'll direct it, I'd be like, yes, yes, yes. But that's not going to happen, right? So so I liked the writing. And so he had a quote that he said to me, you know, Tariq, the person who goes out first in the field will pick the most beautiful flowers. And that is sort of what I can do, because no one knows these places. So I'll walk in there and I'll pick the flowers. And I think it's interesting, right, that Islam is in the news every single day, and the obsession of Islam in the Western world, and still people don't know that this place exists. And with this European superiority, the idea that we know more than everyone else, it's weird, because they know about the Vatican and the Pope and NATO and EU. They know that, but we don't know. And that kind of ignorance is very dangerous, because it's very easy to be led when you don't know, you know. And I think that part of being this dual guy, Swedish, Egyptian, you know, I can step in and out of different worlds, and I can sort of, because an Egyptian can't do this film. It's impossible. I mean, just pure Darwinistic survival reasons, you know, you don't do this film.
This film has many literary influences, Umberto Eco, for example. It also has a Nordic thriller vibe. So who do you make this film for?
For myself, for sure. So I'm a huge Jean Le Carré, Umberto Eco fan. I Umberto Eco gave me the idea. I was like, and I loved that book, and I was like, could you do that? Because I was thinking of writing this as a novel. No, I don't have an audience in mind. I hate that concept. When people talk about target groups and stuff like that, you know, I don't believe in giving people what they want. I believe in that maybe, you know, my favorite title is Günter Wallraff's, I think it's 12 unwanted reportages, you know, or something like that. 12 reportages. I only know the Swedish title. 12 oönskade reportage. It's like, it's so good because it's just like, these are things you don't want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway, you know. So I sort of think when I write the script, like, yeah, to answer that question clear, it's a good question, because when I write, I'm like, nobody gives a shit about this. Nobody wants to hear this. Not in Egypt and not in Sweden. The mission is sort of like, I'm going to write this and no one is going to care and no one is going to want to do it. And then I'm always struck by where people go, we have to do this. And I'm like, oh no. Okay, I'm going to direct it. You know, the practical issues showing up, like, how do you shoot this film? How do you cast it? How do you, I mean, the extras, the costumes. I'm like, I start to think, because like, it's a logistic nightmare to just make a simple film with three people in a room. It's a logistic nightmare. But to do this, I mean, a small scene in this film has at least 20 extras in it. And, you know, there's always someone, you know, picking his nose in the background, or, you know, just looking into the camera like an idiot, you know. And so it's like, you know, it's like sandpapering yourself in the face every day, you know. So the directing part is horrible.
And why did you choose to turn? I mean, you said you were writing as a book, and then you decided to do.
I was talked into it, and it's crazy because, you know, you spend your first 2-3 films, people are, you know, basically saying like, no, 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 and you're like, I want to make a film, I want to make a film, and then you do a film, and it's not so great. And then people are like, we said, no, we don't want you to make a film. Okay, please give me one more chance. Let me make a film. Let me make a film. You make another film. And then I made Cairo Confidential. And I was like, okay, I make this film as a third film. And then, okay, it's boom. And everybody's like, please make a film. And I'm like, I don't want to make a film. I don't want to make a film. Can I do something else? So I have been on a set for the last 5 years. I mean, I've basically been shooting constantly. I was shooting Westworld, I was shooting Ray Donovan, I was shooting an American film, and then I shot this film.
And you hate directing?
I hate directing, but I also have two children, and I have a very hard work ethic. I love cinema, but I hate directing. I love being in the editing room, too.
So how do you see your future now?
That's the million-dollar question, because I finished the film on Friday, basically, you know, and I realize, okay, when you get standing ovation, like in Cannes, I'm like, this is nice. Maybe I should do another film. I mean, you know, that's sort of the God or nature, depending on what you believe, has done sort of an editorial thing in your brain to forget. That's why, like, I remember when we had our first child, when my wife was giving birth, a cynical doctor from Chile came in and gave her epidural, because she was like, I hate this, never again. She was screaming as she was like, and he was like, he just said like with a dead voice, that's why there's too many people in the world, never again. And it's like such a sort of an insight that, no, we forget. And yeah, sure enough, we had another child, you know. So I probably in a year from now, I'm thinking, wow, it's nice to shoot films, you know.
There is a display of incredible corruption in the story. How did you come up with that?
Yeah, but the truth is really more amazing than the fiction in Egypt, because historically, this relationship between religion and state in Egypt goes back. We have to also remember, all our countries are young countries compared to Egypt, you know. I mean, you know, they were having these struggles between religion and state 4,000 years before we started counting time. That's how long this place had been around, you know, and this struggle has been going on. And so the pharaoh always had to deal with the religious power. We all know the story of Echnaton, where he wanted to move the religious center over the Nile, like Sisi is trying to do now. It was erased from history. That was his punishment, you know, probably killed. It's dangerous powers to play with. And today, Sisi, when he got to power, he's the new pharaoh. So in reality, it's kind of opposite to what it is in the film. So Sisi comes to power. What does he do? He goes to Al-Azhar on the prophet's birthday, holds a speech where he says, either you're part of the solution or you're part of the problem. And then he goes to Sheikh Al-Azhar, who is extremely intelligent, and he says to him, listen, I need help because I'm going to change some laws. And Sheikh Al-Azhar says, well, you make any laws you want. It's your job. The parliament and you can do any laws you want. I am here just to interpret the Quran. Yes, but if you help me to interpret the Quran in a way so that I can, because he knows that whatever law he puts out there, people will still follow the religious text. So it's about the hearts or the minds of people, of course. And in Egypt, people are anarchists at heart. I mean, they want the pharaoh up there, but then they don't want to be told what to do. They just want to live their lives. So to be able to control them, you need to have a spiritual reason too. And historically, Al-Azhar have been very good at sort of doing that. So for example, during Mubarak's time, one thing that happened was that it's a huge problem in Egypt with female circumcision. They asked him to do that, to ban it. Hosni Mubarak's wife was fighting to ban female circumcision. And it's not an Islamic tradition, it's an African tradition. And but it's deeply rooted in folkloric sort of ideas. So both Christian and Muslims do it. So they needed Sheikh Al-Azhar to say it's against Islam to do it. And so he did. He put the fatwa that it was. So he probably saved a lot of young girls, you know, from having a horrible life. And so that's one example of how, you know, state and religion was going hand in hand.
Well, thanks a lot to Tariq Saleh, director of Boy from Heaven from the Cannes Festival. I'm Angelo Cerbi for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.